Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Dan Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Al Kasouf.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm okay.
Yeah?
All right. Yeah.
It's really cold outside.
It is. But I'm really excited about it because that means that it's going to be snowy soon. And I really love snowy weather.
Me too.
Me too. It snowed a bit.
It did. Not enough for it to be fun, though. Just enough for it to be slippery.
It is just enough to ruin my shoes.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, what sucks about Chicago and what makes me miss Milwaukee a little bit is that nobody here shovels their sidewalks.
Oh, really? They do in my neighborhood.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Our neighborhood is trash.
Well, our building manager does a good job.
Yeah. No, we've got a really conscientious building manager. I remember the first time it snowed, he was out there at, like, 9 in the morning with a shovel. And he was like, really coming down out there, huh? And then, like, we came back later, and it was a completely shoveled sidewalk.
Yeah.
It was awesome. It was great.
Nice. Yeah.
Anyway, what were you... You had a shoes thing?
Oh, no. I just got really excited because I have these little rubber things that go on the bottom of your,
your
shoes. And they have spikes in them for walking on the ice. So they go over the front of your shoe and around the back. So it's on the bottom of your shoe and it's rubber with spikes. So when it's actually really snowy and icy, you can walk on top of it and still have traction.
Do you remember what that's called?
I think they're called yak trackers or yak tracks or something like that, but I don't know for sure.
Apparently my grandpa who, not my grandpa, my great grandpa who was like, lived in Italy and then moved to New York had those, which is funny to me. Like, I don't know why that's funny to me, but like,
really?
They're just like an Italian like weird, man in his shoes.
It's like weird family lore.
Yeah, well, and
I got them from my mom, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I remember because I talked to my mom about, I was like, man, like, it sucks because, like, I like, there are a few pairs of shoes that I really like that I like wearing in the winter because they're warm, but they're fluffy, and so they get ruined in the in the winter.
Well, they'll still get ruined if you use these. You'll just, you won't fall as often.
Oh.
It's for traction. It's not like a, it doesn't like cover the top of your shoe.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Are you thinking of like galoshes?
Maybe.
Because that sounds like something that an old Italian man would have.
Yeah.
Would be galoshes.
Yeah, those are like big rubber boots that you put on over your shoes to protect your shoe.
Yes.
He had galoshes?
Yes. And my mom was like, you should get those. Cause
you should get those.
Yeah.
You should get galoshes. Oh my God, how have we not thought of you getting galoshes before?
What kind of, how is that, is that going to fit in with my aesthetic, you think?
Yes.
So I'm used to seeing you in cutoff shorts. So I'm of course picturing galoshes and cutoff shorts. And I think it's perfect.
Yeah.
I think it suits you.
You're going to look like a, who's the kid that's, it's like a British cartoon kid. For some reason, I'm aligning him with Paddington. Is it like Kalu or something, or Kalu?
Does he wear galoshes?
He wears like rain boots and shorts.
Nice. I'm not familiar with that.
No, I think I know who you're talking about.
Peak Kalu.
Caillou. I think it's pronounced Caillou.
I don't know. I'm shocked that I got even a part of the way.
Well, I think that his... I'm so sorry that we have not talked about anything that you came onto the show to talk about yet.
It's great.
I think that the reason why is Caillou became a meme format for a lot of things for some reason. Just because, like, I think there are a lot of Caillou memes. I don't know what the, like, joke is. Because a lot of times it's just a very visual gag that has nothing to do with the, like, where the content is from. Like, when they make a meme and they're like, oh, there's the picture of that. Like, that girl with the Goosebump books has nothing to do with whatever the original photo was about. And everything to just do about the way that her face looks.
Yes.
I think it's a very similar thing that Caillou was a meme.
Is that Irma Gerd girl?
Yes.
Yes.
I forgot that she was holding Goosebump books.
Oh, no. I'm very...
See, it has nothing to do with the original context of the picture.
Yeah.
It's just her face.
Yep.
Right. But I think that Caillou gets written a lot for some reason in a meme format somewhere, and that's why it's really easy to not know that it's pronounced Caillou. But the song, there's like a song that goes along with Caillou, the show, because it was like a very popular kids show with the generation, like, not the generation, but kind of like the couple years of kids right after me.
So like your sister watched it?
I don't know. My sister's much younger than me. My sister's
that's
like
what I'm saying.
Yeah. 6 years younger than me. So it might have honestly been, I don't know. Maybe it was, maybe that's why I know about it, because maybe it was younger than her, or maybe it was a little older. I'm not honestly sure.
I don't know.
But it's always interesting to me to think of like what kids' shows are popular at a certain time and how quickly it flips over.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I remember Jimmy Neutron being just barely too young for me.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, came out. How many people know about Jimmy? What subset of people know about Jimmy Neutron, right?
I do because I have a younger sister, but that was not something that I watched.
How old is your sister?
She's, oh God, I don't know. How old am I? She's 28.
Okay.
So she's just a little bit younger than me.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm turning 28 in April.
Okay.
And, so I think I like, I was like a very like old, like beyond her years, like wise beyond her years kid. Yeah. And so I was like, Jimmy Neutron, what's this shit? And so it makes sense to me that like someone who's not like a total asshole 9-year-old would be into that show, or asshole 12-year-old.
I'm a mess over here, you guys. Okay? I'm so sorry.
Are you going to make it?
I'm okay. Apparently, I'm just very slippery. Dropping the headphones, dropping the phone, just
that's all right.
Slipping off.
Well, so, it's amazing that you are back, because the last time we had you on was to talk about movement-based stuff.
Yes.
And that's been
about 8 months.
175 episodes back, roughly.
That's so many.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm so far behind.
Don't feel... Do not feel...
Are you on, like, episode bad. 6?
Yeah, I'm pretty far back there.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I think it's better to go the other way at this point. To go with... And I think we should make this clear at some point to, like, the people that learn about us. I think it's way better to consume our media from the back forward and just listen to the most recent episode. Because we're not... It's not like we're telling... We haven't, like, told a story. I mean, like, so there are some, like, interview themes that we've kind of... I remember I was talking to you about this, because I was like, have we really changed since then? I don't know that we have, but...
I know that we, when we first started, we were very focused on trying to figure out work-life balance.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that we were talking to a lot of people about.
Yeah.
About, like, trying to figure out the best way to, like, practice your art, but also not die of starvation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember if that's something that we talked about with you, because you were very early on.
I don't think that we talked about that. We talked a lot about relocating and that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because a lot of folks, this is something that we actually kind of revisited in a weird way in the last episode, because a lot of folks that we knew and know that live in Chicago are transplants. Like, a lot of people that we know that are artists or are classical musicians or singers or whatever moved here to, like, get a degree in it or whatever, which is an interesting thing. But it's been interesting for us now, because in the last month or so, we've just been like, let's do different shit, you know? Mm-hmm. Let's, like, reach out to politicians. Let's reach out to not just classical singers. And so taking the realization that the community that in the first few months we basically organized are mostly transplants is a really, it's a weird thing to, like, look back towards and be like, oh, there are tons of folks in Chicago that were born here and, like, see what we're doing and, like, want representation to some end.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find myself having to, like, kind of tout my Chicago cred. Like, not in any way that I'm expected to, but just in a way of, like, in terms of, like, me being, like, I can relate to what you're talking about. Because, like, oh, my dad's from Aurora, my mom's from Crystal Lake.
Mm-hmm. Your cousins are all from Lakeview.
My cousins grew up down the street from here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even though I'm technically a transplant, like, I have roots here. But that's a conversation I'm finding myself having with a lot of people that we have on. It's just, like... You know, obviously I don't get what it's like to grow up in the city, but I do know what it's like to be quote-unquote from here or of here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so to relate all of this back to you at all is the thing that's interesting, I think, is from what I remember, too, you had, was it your first kind of session that you were doing of a movement workshop that we brought you on to talk about? Or like,
no, no, I didn't do that until about a month ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I came on to talk about starting my Alexander Technique training.
Right.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Right, 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 right. And now, you're doing your own seminars.
I am, but not in the Alexander Technique.
Okay.
I want to be clear about that.
Sure.
This is something that I'm teaching through the lens of that.
Yeah.
Everything I do, I can't escape it now. My lens is through the Alexander Technique and my training in that. But what I'm teaching is movement in a more general way for singers, addressing the needs of the classical singer. And, hey, guys, you need to look like a human on stage.
Right.
That's my goal.
Cool.
That's what I'm teaching.
That's awesome. So then I guess I'm curious, like, to what extent, like, I guess, like, how are you implementing that? Like, how are you addressing how to move like humans in an artificial setting?
Sure. So I have three goals through my teaching, and they're kind of, for me, the building blocks of becoming comfortable moving as a person and then expanding that even further, doing things that are a little bit more extreme because what we're doing is, like you said, in an artificial setting. So the first goal is teaching some amount of awareness of both your personal physical awareness and awareness of the space around you and your environment. Mm-hmm. And I have ways of doing that through tools that I've found really useful over the years through my own training in dance and the Alexander Technique. And a lot of those things are group activities that I'll do in the workshop, having people relate to each other in different ways and notice the room that we're in different ways. And I think it's really easy to, when you're on stage, to forget that you're in the room. There are people in the room with you, whether or not they're on the stage. There are people in that room. And I think there's value to acknowledging that. And I think it changes the way that you inhabit the space. Even just acknowledging that there's distance between you and the audition panel. Sometimes it can feel like they are so close to you, like they're right on top of you. They're watching everything you do. And they are, but there's more space between you and the audition panel that you
for
can actually
sure.
use. So it's stuff like that that I've found really helpful in my own singing, in my own performing. And that's my number one goal. And then, I have the wrong notebook here. So let me just find this other thing. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to kind of like fill in time, but also say that I've found that like a lot of the things that I've done outside of school have been extremely fruitful to that end. Things like storefront opera and, a lot of work with Opera on Tap too, where because it can be like an intimate and immediate space, like realizing that fourth wall you can do more with, I think is something that is just void from the idea of what the audition room looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not even necessarily looking at them or breaking the fourth wall, but that you know it's there.
Right.
Changes what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think that you can like break the fourth wall too much and it's like, okay, that's all right, that's just glib.
It's braggy.
Yeah, right.
It's Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah. But it's like, who's that quote? It's like, you know the rules so that you can break them. Maybe it's Mark Twain. I don't know. You know what I'm talking about?
Vaguely.
Sounds like a good quote.
I paraphrase the shit out of it.
The rules are made to be broken.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's from an 80s movie.
No. It's like, you learn strict rules so that you know when to break them.
Yeah, I think it's usually applied to things like art education.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of learning what people have done before you and why the rules exist so that it is meaningful when you break them.
Right.
Rather than just making something that has nothing behind it.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and not that there's not value to that, too. Sometimes things that are super freeform are absolutely valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a different, there are more layers.
For sure.
When you're doing something intentionally,
when you're bucking something.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Shall I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the second thing that actually is probably the most important thing to me, is acknowledging that as singers, the whole body is our instrument. Your whole self is your instrument, not just your breathing mechanism and your vocal folds. You know, those are tiny parts of it, really. So there's a little functional anatomy section to my workshop of just talking about how much our bodies are connected and why your feet matter when you sing. So I'm doing that kind of thing. And then the third thing is expanding the movement vocabulary of the singer. So I've had a lot of dance training, and I've done a lot of movement improv, and that's a really fun thing for me. But I know for a lot of people that is a terrifying thing. Like, what if I make this choice and it's really awkward? And so providing a space to be able to explore that kind of stuff, like, hey, what choices could you make if you weren't so worried about it? And how can you use these choices, or even just use the ability to make these choices because you've flexed that muscle in your performing?
Yeah.
The idea of movement improv sounds like something that is just so entirely out of my comfort zone.
It's not, though. You can do it. You can do it. It under the right conditions, I feel like anybody can do that. And improv can be something as simple as pedestrian movements in a combination that you don't have them planned out to do. So pedestrian movements, things like walking, scratching your head, things that we do in everyday life, those are still movements that you can improv. You know, you can be in the moment and decide, I'm going to scratch my head right now. You know, and that might be a really interesting acting choice. But if you are super freaked out about making that choice, it's not within your vocabulary in that moment.
I guess that's kind of what I find intimidating about movement. And this is a realization I'm coming to right now, is that I'm intimidated by, like, the realm of movement because... And I think it has to do with the fact that I don't have that backbone of the rules that are able to be broken. Is that I don't have the vocabulary to know that, like, this could be incorporated. Like, this move here is technically dancing, is technically movement, even though I deem it just me moving my arm or whatever, or... So, I don't know. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know, it just made me think about movement in a different way, which is cool.
Yeah. So that's my goal, is to provide that different perspective. And also to, once you get comfortable with things that are already familiar movements, expanding out of that to incorporate more movements into what you already have so that you can draw from those. You know, flailing is a choice. If you choose to flail, great. But... You know, if you're in a space where you don't have the ability to make the choices because you are freaked out or you're unaware of what you're doing or whatever, then you can't make those choices.
Yeah.
So that circles it back to the awareness. Right?
Let's use flailing as an example.
Sure.
Let's say that you choose to flail and you do it in a way that, like, you're in the middle of a phrase and you flail and it makes you mess up whatever you're singing. Is that from lack of awareness of, like, I guess I'm asking, like, where within those tenets that you've developed that would fall? Is that just, like, lack of awareness of your anatomy or lack of awareness of, like, your space or, like...
I think it's more the distribution of your focus. Okay. So that's more a mental thing. So if you are really well prepared with what you're going to do, then you can think about other things. You can think about, well, I'm going to make a movement choice. But if you are not necessarily as well prepared with what you're going to do and you start to think about other things, you're going to go into this protective mode of, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm doing, or I don't feel prepared about this. And that's where you're going to go astray, I think. Is you give focus to the doubt.
Okay.
And that's where the mistakes come from. You give focus to the doubt. Huh. Even in, like, a split second.
That's interesting. Yeah. Because I'm not the strongest mover when I'm singing. Mm-hmm. It's just not something that I automatically do. Mm-hmm. And there have been times where, like, you know, I'll be singing an aria, or one thing is coming to mind, actually, where it was in an opera class where we had to do an unconventional staging of an aria. And I remember at one point I had to throw a stuffed animal across the room and then go pick it up and bring it back. And I had just, like, absolutely no breath mm-hmm. for the rest, which is such, like, a pedestrian, like, literally it was walking across the room, picking up an animal and walking back. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why the hell? Like, that wasn't aerobically, mm-hmm. like, I'm not, if I were to just do that in my life, I would not be out of breath. Why mm-hmm. is it that incorporating this movement is so, like, all of a sudden just, like, this anaerobic crazy thing?
I have a better answer. I'm going to change my answer. Because not that what I said was crap, but I think I have a clearer way of saying it.
Okay.
So the way that we're trained as singers doesn't include a movement component, and it doesn't include your whole body as the instrument.
Okay.
So when you're thinking about doing something that you don't already associate with singing,
okay,
that's going to be an extra process that you're going through. So what I actually want to do with this is incorporate using your whole body into the act of singing. So there mm-hmm. will be singing in the class mm-hmm. to start to have that training.
Good.
That those things can go together. Yeah, because I think that that's how I decided I wanted to do this, was realizing that it's not part of the training. So you can take acting classes and dance classes and whatever, and those are great skills, but you're not going to associate them with singing. They're going to be separate in your brain in terms of skill sets, and they need to go together.
Yeah.
Is that...
It's like a reprogramming kind
yes.
of...
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's really cool.
Which I think is, like, especially with movement, it's something that we've been doing for so long, but don't realize that there is programming. And so, yeah. And I mean, that's something that I remember appreciating that about the way that you were thinking about posture and movement the first time we talked, which is doing that, you know, mm-hmm. and having to break mm-hmm. so much, like... You know.
Oh yeah, because when we last had you on,
and I'm getting waves of like, yeah. "Oh right, that's what we talked
yeah,
about."
Yeah,
which, like, is crazy because that was like 8 months ago.
Well, because you were talking about the fact that it was 10 months ago.
It was a period of time that most would feel was.
It's just crazy that we're, like, almost coming up on a year of this. It's really cool. But the last time you were on, you were saying, like, that you were at the point where you knew what you were doing wrong, but you hadn't yet fixed it.
Yep. That's a continuous process, and that's something I'll be doing for the rest of my life.
Well, it took you so long to do it, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, it took me so long to learn how to move the way that I was already moving, and so now to realize that something in that patterning is not efficient mm-hmm. and is not serving me, I have to learn to repattern that, but I also have to see that first. Because mm-hmm. all I know is my experience.
Right.
And if my experience is different than reality, which unfortunately is the case for all of us all the time, then it's going to be really hard to change anything. You know, you only know what you know.
Right.
And you don't know what you don't know. So if I don't know that I'm holding my head a certain way, I'm not going to be able to change that.
Sorry, I just burped.
And it's do what you got to do.
It's gross.
I know, you deserve so much better than this. Us talking about ourselves, me doing gross things into the mic, making jokes about galoshes.
It's totally fine. It's great.
Did you say there was a third thing?
I said the third thing.
I'm so sorry.
It's totally fine. It was movement vocabulary, expanding your movement vocabulary. That was a separate thing from treating your body as your instrument,
right?
Your whole body.
Here's what I'm finding. I'm finding everything interesting, but I'm just gonna keep going on that tangent. When you mentioned like acknowledging other people in the room,
mm-hmm.
that's something that I think comes naturally to people, but it's something that we kind of shut out when
yes.
we're mm-hmm. performing.
Yes.
Because I know that, like, for instance, and this is like a hyper specific example where I can tell the difference between sleeping in an empty house and sleeping in a full house where, like, I'm still in my room. I'm still, you know, I'm still by myself in that room sleeping, but I can tell the difference. I can know that the room next to me is occupied or vacant, or mm-hmm. the room in, you know, down the hall is occupied or vacant. And it's a different experience because I'm aware of where these people are in relationship to me, and it affects my mental state. Mm-hmm. It affects my experience. And so it makes sense to me that you really, like, in order to be able to, like, feel comfortable and feel, like, successful in your movements, if that's even, like, a word that's...
Sure.
Yeah. It, you know, making yourself aware of, like, this is where this person is, actually. Not, like, mm-hmm. down a big, scary anxiety hallway. Mm-hmm. It's, like, they're right there.
Yeah.
But there's this space between us.
And yeah.
So that's... I think that's really cool.
Well, I think it's really interesting the, like, parallel to the thinking about it, like, trauma. The idea of I'm circling back to the idea of... movement is such a thing that we learn through instinct and by doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking that and putting it through a very verbal lens, like building a movement vocabulary
mm-hmm.
and building the building of structures within movement is so interesting to me and also so daunting. And for me, who is very much a person that is like, linguistics and language first, movement second, it's hard to wrap my head around. And I'm curious for you, which is why I was like, wait, which was the third thing? Not that you weren't very clear, you said it very well. I'm just like, it's an interesting, I got to imagine that there's probably, like, there's a lot of that, because I think a lot of people that will come to a space like this of, like, I want to better understand movement
mm-hmm.
are a similar thing where there's that kind of like a divide of, like, understanding how movement specialists and folks that think about movement really well, folks that are trained in dance,
mm-hmm.
folks, yeah, that the way those folks' brains work through learned behavior and through just innate ability, that there's that bridge of getting to people that, you know, through learned behavior and through innate ability are just, like, talkers, writers, mm-hmm. readers, you know what I mean? So I'm curious for you, from your perspective, like, what has that been a prevailing experience, and what have you kind of gleaned from that chasm?
I'm so glad that you're asking me that, because as it turns out, I consider myself to be a very inarticulate person, and if I could interpretive dance my way through life, I would never speak again.
Wow. So yeah, that gives me, like, agita. Not agita, yeah. But, like, anxiety. Yeah, agita is the wrong word.
But. But I have found it a really wonderful learning experience for me to find the words to express what it is I want to convey, to give singers the tools that I want them to have. Because that's my goal, is to give people the tools that have worked for me, the tools
right.
that I find so useful. It's not me just saying what I have to say in one way. I'm actually trying to teach the tools.
Mm-hmm.
So the words that I use for it are less important to me than whether or not it's that I can find a way for each individual to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I need to have words in one set way that work for everybody.
that makes total sense to me, because it starts to get to a point where it becomes a thing where it's like jargon, mm-hmm. like business jargon even, or like the thing that I'm flashing to right now is, for a while, I like considered myself and studied a photography, and I haven't mm-hmm. as much lately, but you know, I picked up a lot of like Susan Sontag books, who's like a big photography study person, and it's a very similar thing where folks that gravitate towards photography aren't necessarily verbal or language based mm-hmm. thinkers. And so coming to the idea of building these structures and doing them in a way that is communicable, is that the word, right? You have to do it, you know, for you as a singer coming to movement classes and thinking, I want to teach this to specifically singers, a very mm-hmm. language based group of folks, you have to build that's a daunting task.
It is the
like building of it. Yeah, because it's building a linguistic based structure mm-hmm. in a non-linguistic based sphere mm-hmm. for linguistic based thinkers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you're doing a great job. I think that you have to do those. Yeah, I'm curious more what kind of your processes have been. Like, what about the process that you've developed do you think is working?
Oh, that's a great question. So all of what I'm trying to teach comes from my own experience of things that have worked. And there are lots of things that I have tried that I don't think are the right fit for singers. Mm-hmm. They've been great experiences for me, but aren't necessarily going to serve the population of singers. So I'm starting from a really basic place of teaching awareness. And I teach children's dance classes. And that has been a really great place for me to learn what words work and what don't. Because with children, they don't have as many hang-ups about whether or not they're interpreting correctly what you're saying. They're just going to do whatever it is that they think you're saying, mm-hmm. you know, and it's so many different variations of the same thing. So for my own expression of what I want to teach, that's been really a great help in the process. Mm-hmm. But the material that I'm drawing from comes from other classes that I've taken that are movement for singers mm-hmm. taught by dancers. And mm-hmm. what's different for me is applying all of this to the act of singing.
For sure.
So it's taking some of these tools that I think are great on their own and using my experience with how they've freed up my singing and freed up my ability to make movement choices in performance by teaching the same material while we're singing or while we're making sound, or at the very least while thinking about the process of singing. Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of it is taking away the stigma of, oh, but I'm not a dancer. Oh, but I don't know how to move already.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, to that stigma, I'm now thinking about, you know, I think the trained singer's first person that they're going to go to about making choices during, like, an aria performance or something like that is a voice teacher. And, like, mm-hmm. not to shit on voice teachers, but I don't think of very movement-based thinkers when I think of voice teachers. I think the folks that are great voice teachers are studying pedagogy of the voice. They didn't study dance.
Do you work with Connie?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Al and I have a different experience.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. No, and I'm sure there are. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So Connie is like much like Al, is like
Connie.
Connie Haas.
Connie Haas.
Connie Haas mm-hmm. in Milwaukee.
Yes, yeah. Connie Haas, Milwaukee. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
She's a lot of her teaching is Alexander inspired. I don't know if it's exactly Alexander.
It's Alexander inspired. She used to co-teach a class for singers with an Alexander teacher.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So she's not certified, but she has studied the technique extensively, and mm-hmm. that is the lens through which she teaches voice.
Hmm. It's, like, life-changing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, because what she's asking from you is, based on what your body is actually doing in the process of singing, it's, there's some amount of imagery in her teaching, but very little, and only if you need it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really based on creating the conditions that your body needs to be in to be able to make beautiful sound.
It's really, like, I came from a very, like, smoke and mirrors, like, teacher in my undergrad, and I went directly from her to Connie, and I was just like, okay, so, no, literally my undergrad teacher told me that for every note, there is a different peg in my head.
Oh my God.
And I have to imagine placing that at different pegs in my head. And so I went to Connie, and I was like, and she was like, for, you know, since that was podcast gold, that was me jerking my head in different right, yeah. directions.
Hitting pegs.
Yeah, hitting quote-unquote pegs. And Connie was like, what are you doing? And I was like, the pegs, Connie. It's the pegs. No, I think that that's, you know, I think that that's so valuable for singers to keep in mind, because there is a lot of, like, from these, you know, 19th century to early 20th century singers who, like, wrote all of these, like, on singing books about, like, imagine that you're eating a plate of spaghetti, and the spaghetti is the aria, and the fork is your throat.
The shape of the noodle is the lip space.
That's actually that brought it back to actually being feasible. But no, I think that it's valuable, like, to really be thinking, like, realistically, like okay, get rid of all the a lot of the imagery, and just focus on what you're actually doing.
Mm. Yeah, and all of the imagery comes from a very well-meaning place. Mm-hmm. I know that it can serve a purpose, but you can't see the voice. You can't see it functioning on an internal level when mm-hmm. you're producing sound, and your teacher can't see that. They also, this is the important part, they can't feel what you're feeling, and they can't yeah. experience your experience. So they're coming up with something that they're trying to translate into your experience, what they actually want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where a lot of the trouble comes from. And the best teachers are the ones who are willing to find different ways to say things instead of trying the same thing over and over again if it's not working for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being willing to change the words that they use because you're translating that into your experience. Whatever right. you hear all day long, you know, not just in singing, you're translating what you hear into your experience through the lenses that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you only know what you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. We're at coming up on 40 minutes.
Oh my God, what did I even say in 40 great minutes?
You killed it. It was great. I think Al and I pitched a different idea for the end of the episode, which I'm really excited about, and we'll talk about it in a second, but I think the thing that to do would be to do what we do at the end of every episode, not our closing, but
no,
the 1 minute plug now.
Okay.
The last 15 minutes for those listening, we're going to talk about astrology. And so I think this is a very good, like, if you're like, oh, that's pseudoscience bullshit.
Bye.
Plug. You can go about your business, you know that you should check out scottmebag.com and yada, yada, yada. You've heard the drill by now. Before we do our little astrology bit, and if you are now very excited about the end of this episode, I'm very glad to get to hand over to you a very patient and waiting audience to give you your 1 minute plug they're wrapped with attention now. Anyone that was that whose ears peaked when they were like, "Oh, astrology, that's an interesting thing." So the last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1 minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes it's very obvious, like a movement based seminar for singers. Otherwise, it can be shout outs of folks that you think are doing dope work, and any like media that you're consuming, like TV shows, movies, stuff like that, if you want.
Great. So I'm going to plug my upcoming movement class. It's a 6-week session of movement for singers. So I have 6 hour-and-a-half long classes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I hope that's how long it is. I'm going to double check on that. But I think it's an hour and a half, starting on January 21st.
Nice.
From 7:45 to 9:15 p.m. That's an hour and a half. I did the math. Okay, cool. So it starts on Sunday, January 21st, and the last class then is going to be February 25th, also a Sunday, and it should be a good time. Lots to learn, and that's what I got to say about that. I have information about the registration available.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer if people would email me directly for the registration form.
Mm-hmm.
I like to have that first contact instead of just making the form available. I want to know who's out there and why they're coming to the class.
Yeah.
So they can email me at alexandra@alexandrakasouf.com. I'll spell my last name. It's K-A-S-S-O-U-F.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, so I would firmly believe, because I have a feeling I'm going to put it in the episode description that we talk a little bit about astrology, that there's going to be someone listening to this that's much better at astrology than I am. I'm by no means an astrological expert. I'm not even sure if there's what you need to do to become that person that reads charts, but I just recently downloaded an app that lets you do birth charts. And I've been using astrological sun signs as a way to think about sociological and like personality traits for a long time. And when I was 14, I started doing it. And then when people started telling me their birthdays, I just started remembering it. I don't know why, but I remember most people. Because you're a Libra, right?
No, I was born in February.
Oh, Aquarius. Yeah. That makes absolute sense. Anyway, sorry.
See, this is the stuff I can't handle.
Yeah.
He'll be like, you're an Aquarius, aren't you? And then they'll be like, I'm a Virgo. And they'll be like, oh, of course.
Well, Libras and Aquarians are both air signs, which is why I did that.
Hmm.
Okay.
No, I'm not. The,
no, I know. I,
yeah.
I'm
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm goading you.
I have to say also that I am super skeptical of astrology. I know nothing about it. And that's part of the reason that I'm so curious about all this stuff that you're going to tell me about my birth chart.
Well, so we're just going to read your sun sign, your moon sign, and your rising sign.
Okay.
And we're just going to read this things from that. I'm not going to give too much of my own, because I was saying this to someone recently. I think that for me, as a person that is not like looking at like where the planets are in which houses directly, like looking at the chart, I can't look at a chart and understand it yet.
Uh-huh.
It would not be fruitful for me to like try and glean anything more than what those signs are about, but I'm very familiar with the archetypes of each sign at this point, and it's definitely an interesting thing
to think
about.
Familiar with what rising sign means, and like what rising and what moon mean.
Yeah, so for those at home, you know, you split up into 12 signs. The sun sign is the one that you're most likely familiar with. The sun sign is the like easiest one to know. It's where the sun was. So like, for example, I'm a Sagittarius, and Sagittarians are very direct, they're very tactless, they're very talkative. They're very they're very obsessed with honesty, to a fault. They can't like be nice if it means sacrificing telling someone what they think. But that is also influenced by your moon sign, and your moon sign is kind of like the other half if you will. And it's something that is very frequently overlooked, because the moon sign, for a while, I thought I was a Sagittarius Capricorn cusp, meaning that I thought that my sign, sun sign, was, because I'm very introverted, and so but I'm a very talkative person. And so I never really quite understood that in the relationship of astrology. And I was like, well, maybe I'm kind of also partly Capricorn, because my birthday's on the 17th. But I've since learned that that's not legit. That's something I made up. And so I found that I'm a Taurus moon. And so what the moon sign is about is the same way that the sun and the moon, kind of like the sun is the daytime and energy and where, you know, how you interact with the world around you. The moon is very much like how you are intimately, how you are alone, how you are internally, I think is the better way of kind of thinking about it. And the third thing is the rising sign, which is the mask that you put on when you're interacting with other people.
And in terms of like where like the stars are and like stuff like that, I'm wondering, so the sun sign is where the sun was when you were born.
Mm-hmm.
The moon sign is where the moon was where you were born.
Mm-hmm.
What does rising mean?
Oh, I don't know. I think it has to do with the
constellation?
The sunrise, I think. No. I don't think that's true. I don't actually know.
While you're putting in numbers, I'm gonna look up what rising means.
Yeah, I am definitely not.
Someone who's super into astrology is like, it's this, you idiots!
Yeah, which fucking right into the show. Oh, I also want to plug too, now that we have a bunch of people listening. We have a Facebook group specifically for podcast-related discussions. And I mean, also kind of other official Scoppy-related discussions. It's called Sounding Board. It's a group where folks that whenever we say write into the show, I think this is the place where people can do it easy. Obviously, people can write into the show at scoppymag@gmail.com, but also going to the Sounding Board Facebook group is a definite thing. So anyway, while Maureen is picking up what rising sign means, so the way that folks that are into astrology, sorry, my Facebook is open, I guess. Those three things, the sun sign, the moon sign, and the rising sign, are the major players in a person's like chart, birth chart.
It reflects the zodiac sign that was ascending on the eastern horizon the moment you were born.
Oh.
Yes.
All right, then.
Yep. Yeah. Which is why I thought sunrise. So where were you born? Do you mind
where?
Saying?
Yeah, oh, I was born in Syracuse, New York.
Okay, cool. That is a big part of it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Do you by chance know the hospital?
I
think Syracuse is specific
Saint
enough.
St. Francis.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Yeah, so you need to be able to put... Because for the rising sign, it's going to be a different... The horizon, right. Where the horizon sure. was is going to be different. Conceptually, as far as trying to make the most logical sense out of all this works, it's about the cosmic energy that different stars and plants provide to your experience.
Plants or planets?
What did I say?
Plants.
Yes, plants. No, what? Planets. I'm kidding. That was a joke. Yeah. And obviously, like, big disclaimer, like, you know, I'm a big ol' atheist, and, you know, I'm not saying this is, like, how the world entirely... Okay, so, is that St. Francis... Does St. Francis Erie?
No, that doesn't sound right.
St. Francis... So, there are, like, a few St. Francis hospitals. I'm gonna have to just put... Okay. This app shows every single hospital.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. So there's St. Francis Duchess, St. Francis Orange, St. Francis Bronx. No, that wouldn't be right. St. Francis Cattaraugus. Does any of that sound familiar to Syracuse?
No, but I can Google it.
I can also just put in Syracuse, too.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm just going to do that. Yeah, if anybody at home is like, that's not a book
Nobody's
board.
From Syracuse.
We have a really intense following in Syracuse.
We do.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Nothing.
I do wonder, though, because... I do wonder how many people listen to the show randomly just from, like, finding our RSS feed because they know how to search for that. Because we do put tags and stuff. So what, your birthday, February?
February 11th, 1988.
Great.
And now everybody knows how old I am.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, folks.
No, it's all right.
do you remember the time?
12:35 a.m. And I know this doesn't make a difference for anything, but I was born on my due date, right on time.
You mentioned that. Well, no, and I like the story that goes along with your mom's impression of that.
Oh, God, my mom laughs for just minutes every time she says that.
And okay. Sorry,
I didn't tell you guys why that was so funny to her when I told you that. She thinks it's hilarious that I was born on my due date because that's very much the kind of person that I am.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm always early. I'm on time. I'm ready to go.
Cool. So, make sure it changed your last name for some reason. Because it's 1F, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I knew that. February 11th, 1988, 12:35 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Syracuse, New York. So, Aquarius Sun, which we knew already, Scorpio Moon, and Scorpio Rising.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
So, let me pull up the Scorpio Moon first, because let's do Aquarius first. I'm going to do it this first. So, here's what it has to say. The sun represents your will and purpose, your sense of vitality, and your evolving higher self. In Aquarius, it is fixed air. So each of the signs are split into two different categories, one of which is the cardinal nature of it. So it's either fixed, mutable, or, I don't remember. But then the other one is elements, air, fire, water, earth. So Aquarius is fixed air. It rules the circulation and the ankles. Yeah, every sign has, like, a body part that relates to it.
Interesting.
Your ruling planets are Uranus and Saturn. You have a rebellious nature and are eccentric, spontaneous, and original. Aquarians are forward-thinking and detached and can seem conservative, though they really are not so. You are scientifically minded and logical and confident in manner. You're likely to be years ahead of your time in the way that you think. You can also appear to be more involved with your work than with other people, although you truly value social contact. You are intuitive, imaginative, and inventive, and inclined to take chances, especially in the service of your goals. You can be quite noble in your deepest nature, but you also may come across as critical and demanding.
Oh my God.
Your highest purpose.
So accurate.
Your highest purpose is found in alignment. Wait till you hear the Scorpio stuff, then, if you feel like that is legit. Because your highest purpose is found in aligning yourself with the advancement of social and humanitarian ideals. Yeah. So that, I get along with Aquarians very well because, I don't know entirely why, but what people make fun of about Aquarians, I'm in a lot of astrology Facebook groups now, is the fact that, like, that they're the kind of person that you're going to text them and they're not going to text you back right away. Or they're going to, like...
Sorry, Devere.
But they're also, like, extremely...
Sorry.
No.
It's 100% true.
They're extremely ideological. They're ideologues at most. They're very interesting thinkers. They think a lot. But to that end, they're great. They're gifted communicators, but, like, it is... very much like the one that I'm thinking of is I had a really great roommate for a while that was an Aquarian and, like, just one of the most introverted people I know, but also great with people, but, like, entirely on his terms.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I think is something that
one of my best friends is an Aquarius, Lindsay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And she's very Aquarius type. Like, you know, Aquarians tend to be, like, that forward-thinking ideologue thing. They're, like, a lot of them are tatted. A lot of them have, like, colored hair. Or, like, can be this very, like, you know... But also can be, very aware of tradition. And it's an interesting thing. So, let's go to the Scorpio Moon now. if that's cool. Or did you have, like,
No, that's great. I'm just going to sit here in awe.
So, the moon in Scorpio. So, Scorpios are interesting. I've never super gotten along with Scorpios. And it's... I don't like doing that. Like, I don't like being that person that's like, this... A pox on their house. Like, this entire sign does not... I do not get along with. But it's... I'll read about it. The moon in Scorpio gives a moody and serious cast to the personality. You may need to lighten up. With the moon in Scorpio, you're very sensual, and your feelings are strong and run deep. You're passionate in your response to life. Your early home life may have been difficult, and you may react especially strongly to emotionally charged situations in your adult life because of it. You're extremely loyal. You may have a tendency toward control or even domination of your partner.
Can you stop telling all my secrets?
Well, and that's super interesting that you said that, because that, as far as, like, the colloquial understanding of what Scorpios are like, that is very much a part of it. They're extremely secretive. They're extremely... They have a... It's interesting. I think it's different being a moon in Scorpio, but Scorpios tend to be considered, like, manipulators and kind of, like keeping things to themselves and using them when advantageous. But also, they're extremely loyal. If you, like, Scorpios, if they count you as one of their tribe, one of their people, they'll go to whatever end to do what they can for you, you know, which I think is super interesting. The last sentence is, you can be stubborn and are possessed of a powerful will. You should beware of being overly critical of others. So that's Scorpio moon. And it's interesting to think about that, but also make sure to think about it in the light of, like, it being that kind of, like, the moon's relationship to the sun, you know? Mm-hmm. And what those kind of Scorpio ideas are in relationship to your Aquarius sun. Which I think is actually a very interesting pairing as far as, like, what those two signs represent to each other. So I think we can just chug right along to the Scorpio rising. And this is, like I was saying, I think
Scorpio.
The idea that it's... I think the idea of thinking about it like it's what you tend to try to promote to the people that you meet, especially when they first are getting to know you. So Scorpio rising people are passionate and deep and can be secretive. Your ruling planets are Mars and Pluto. You can have a dark look to your appearance, but you may also appear sweet and refreshingly innocent. Scorpio is the most intense sign of the zodiac and is associated with sexual activity and with the symbolism of death and rebirth. Your emotions run deep, and you also have great personal magnetism and even the power to coerce others. Your will is strong, and you let nothing stand in your way. You may suffer in your life, but your pain leads to important personal transformation. You're very good at group dynamics and working with the public. You're a shrewd judge of other people's motives, and you may be willing to use your special knowledge to your own advantage. Although you can be manipulative when you work out your issues to be more in line with your own higher nature, you have also the power of a healer to transform yourself and society around you.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And you know, to the idea, I think a lot of people come to astrology with this thought of like, oh, well, a lot of the things that they say about different signs can be things that apply to everyone.
Yeah.
That does not apply to me. Not that I'm like so great and not manipulative. I mean, like, I am so not secretive that it is damaging to me. I like frequently have told people what I think of them. And in a lot of cases, a lot of folks don't love that. Like, that's why fire signs have the relationship. Because Maureen is also a fire. Maureen's an Aries, which is why we get along and why we talk, like, talking to people. But the idea of, like, some people don't like being told what people think of them, you know?
Our communication is very much, like, it's very open. It'll just be, like, I'll be sitting there in a bad mood, and he'll be like, what's wrong? And I'll be like, my stomach hurts!
Yeah. Well, so what do you think?
I think that it's a really interesting thing to hear all of these things said through my perspective of expecting it to be things that are really general about everybody, but at the same time I'm like, wait, but that's a really real combination of the things that I experience about myself. So, I don't know, it's kind of fun.
It's definitely, so I actually liken it to my relationship with religion, where I have been going to church every Sunday now for like a while, as a singer, as a paid position. Mm-hmm. But there are times with certain congregations, especially with the one that I'm at now, where you get why people go.
Sure.
And you get the community of it, and you understand, and you feel the human energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, when I think about like astrology, and I think about like, and I'm putting quotes, cosmic energy, the idea being that where the sun is and the energy that which there is scientific evidence, the idea that the sun provides this energy, to the what degree that energy affects our personality, obviously scientifically that's not a thing that is a thing, but I think it'd be an interesting thing to be able to take these things and recognize potential traits of at what point you were born during the year and how cosmic and how like the tune of Uranus and the sun and which way that note hits your year. Maybe
sorry, tune of Uranus was funny.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was a bad choice. But do you see what I mean by that?
Yeah, sure, I do.
Yeah, I don't know.
It makes me wonder if I have evil twins walking around who were born at that same moment in that same hospital.
That's what I got obsessed with, was the idea of like, this can't be.
Right.
But I found in a lot of cases that a lot of people feel similarly to you and to me and to people that, where it's like, oh, it's really hard for me to believe this, uh-huh. but also like.
But it's interesting.
This is what I am. I want to be this person, and I don't want to be the other sign. Do you know what I mean by that?
Mm.
And like, as I was saying, for a long time, I thought I was a Sagittarius Capricorn cusp, mm-hmm. but it never really made sense mm-hmm. to me. And then I was like, oh, I have a Taurus moon. Taurus moons love to cook, care a lot about their home, have a great deal of need for prestige and feeling like they matter to other people. And that super redefined to me what it was about Sagittarius that didn't make sense.
You matter to me. Come take my workshop. Did nice. I do that manipulative thing in the right way? Is that how that works?
Yeah. Nice. Cool. Cool. Nice.
Yeah. My moon, my stuff is that I'm an Aries sun, a Leo rising, and a Libra moon.
Because, yeah, we're both Leo risings, which was super interesting. We just learned this week. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's super. Oh, right. Yeah. It's super interesting. Because it's all about that idea of, like, what persona. And so the idea of being a performer and being a person who, like, we very much, like, want and appreciate being
we're into ourselves enough that we started a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we're like, oh, yeah. I'll be a public personality. That's fine.
Yeah. Whereas, like, you're saying all these things about being secretive and yada yada. I lock the door to my bedroom when I'm at the apartment by myself. Like, there's just something about that that rings true to me about being secretive, you know?
It's super, yeah, and it's, and you want to go like, that's not why I do that. You know what I mean? Like,
why do I do that?
Right, yeah,
what
yeah,
the
yeah.
hell is that? Why do I do
makes
that?
You, and at least makes you think about it, which I really appreciate. I appreciate having a guideline with which to think about those things through. Cool.
This is fun.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Great. Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, we are not an astrology podcast. I guess we're going to start. We could start to be if you want to come on to the show.
No.
You want to talk about astrology.
No.
Astrology. I actually am dead serious that I think it would be really cool to publish, like, even if it were just monthly, like, horoscope readings. That would be interesting to me, but Maureen hates that idea. But if you are at home, and I'm talking to you privately now, I've leaned into this mic so that Maureen can hear me, but But we've got a moment here. If you want to write astrology horoscopes for the show, shoot me a message
for the
magazine. Editor in chief gives me specific powers.
I manage our email. So I mean, like, if Daniel wants to publish horoscopes, it's out of my purview.
Anyway, head to scopymag.com. That's our site. We post all of our articles there. Keep up with, and I'll spell that, keep up with us on social media, Scopy Magazine, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public. And we spell all of that SCAPIMAG.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. Everything that we've been able to do up to this point has been through your generosity. So first of all, thank you so much. Second of all, we could use a little bit more help. If you're in a position to give, you can head to our website, scopymag.com, and go to our donate section. There are a couple ways that you can give. First of all, you could do a one-time donation. If you choose to do that, you will have our eternal gratitude. Or you could give on a monthly level, where you could support us for as little as $5 a month. If you're interested in donating on a higher level or interested in advertising opportunities with us, feel free to email us at scopymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.